So, good afternoon. Congratulations for making it this far. I am in the enviable position of standing between you and reception, so I will do my best not to stand too long in that place. My name is David Lykus. I am a professor of Library and Information Science at Syracuse University School of Information Science, and I was commissioned to write one of the papers. This paper, Expect More, Why Libraries Cannot Become STEM Educators. Now, you're thinking that's because it's time for the cranky old white-bearded professor to get up and yell at people getting off my yard. And frankly, that's maybe where we go. But I am going to just spend a little bit of time on this paper, primarily telling you things you already know. And then I have some issues that, as you tend to come up, that I can't help myself from ranting about. We'll go into those, as you heard from my comments after lunch. Clearly, I can stay well with myself. So anyway, let's start the paper. There we go. Would all the libraries in the room please raise your hands? Put them down, put them down, put them down.
That's true.
This is a library.
Well, kind of.
Would all the librarians in the room please raise your hand? Oh. Library staff, raise your hands. Right? This is the part of it. Libraries are buildings or abstractions and can do nothing. What we have spent a lot of time talking about this morning and this afternoon was how libraries could do something. And it doesn't work that way. If it worked that way, then we would be able to walk into any library and expect an equal amount of service and expertise in all things that we do. It doesn't work that way. We know that what happens is that people make things happen. Now, I say that, and you say, oh, fine, Dave, we're parsing words. But remember when Marcia talked about complex problems versus complicated problems? Pretty much any time you involve people, you move over the line to complex problems. And it's not because we're necessarily complicated, but the truth is we really are. You know, it's like you hit that hot button issue, you didn't know what to expect, this person never calls you back, this person doesn't answer email, and that's only just me. This idea that when we deal with people, what we're really dealing with is interpersonal connections. What we know again and again when you see successful programs of any sort, STEM programs, entrepreneurship programs, early reading programs, all sorts of things, is it's the connections between people that make things happen. And as we heard over and over again, not just directors coming up with nice memos, but every level of an organization interacting and talking. I say that again because one of the questions that I understand we're confronting and working on is how do we move ahead STEM and public libraries? And the answer is that's not what you move along. You move along collaborations, you move along people, you move along objectives, you move along and build a coalition. I've heard, well, let's come up with a research agenda. I've been part of many research agendas in my life. They're great when you're on the board drafting the research agenda, and they're horrible if you're not. And so what often happens is you put this agenda and it just becomes this nice little political wall. As opposed to putting together a group of people who say, we agree to fund these things. We agree to do these kinds of studies. We agree to move forward. It's about people. A lot of attention is geared towards the front of the building. Now, all my librarians are going to start doing this real soon. Okay? Because anyone with a brilliant idea comes to a library with a brilliant idea, and the thing they want from you is your front space. They want a place to do something. I go a little nuts about the idea that we're going to reinvent X, Y, or Z. We're going to help libraries move forward in the world. Right? And how are we going to do that? We are going to have STEM programs in your lobby. Okay, now, how many who? Are you going to coordinate them? Are you going to find out if they make it work? By the way, we're not allowed to be open at this hour. Do you understand what public laws are about civic spaces and all these complicated things that librarians have to deal with on a regular basis and just drives everyone else insane, right? What do you mean I can't use your meeting space on Thursday? Why not? Because if we let you use it, we have to let the KKK use it. What? No. Yeah, really. Right? This idea of the complexities of the environment we work in, it's important to understand things happen on both ends. A lot of attention's paid to the front of the building. I was recently working with a researcher who was convinced that we could fix libraries by having an app that people could sign up and be part of human libraries, so you could check out people. Which, the human libraries, by the way, very cool idea. But it's not the app that will say libraries, right? Well, you know, we do those. Oh, yeah, but this is an app. And? This technological determinism where we feel that we have simple solutions to complex problems becomes a problem when we constantly abstract our thinking to the notion of libraries. It's like we've done this. I'm to blame. Many of us are to blame. Public libraries. Saying a public library is a lot like saying, I don't even know what it's like saying. It's like saying a local diner. I mean, they're different. They have different constituencies, different physical layouts, different histories, different budgeting. Sometimes it drives me nuts when we say, oh, all academic librarians are like this, all public librarians are like this. So you're trying to tell me that Harvard has more in common with Fredonia Community College than it does with the Boston Public Library. Really? We can't constantly move at the work at the level of abstraction. We have to go down to the people. Now, this is my part about picking on the STEM folks, right? You should know better. Don't treat us like we're just, you know, there to help you out. Now let me pick on my colleagues. You're greedy. The greedy librarian problem comes something like this. There are consequences to a society that chooses the metaphor, phraseology, and actions of consumerism. Wow. When we talk about the people who walk into our libraries, or our universities, or our public spaces as consumers, we instantly put them in a different relationship to us. Suddenly, we become the people that must remedy their problem. When we look at patrons, we call them customers or consumers or users, we treat them differently than if we called them and thought of them as members, patrons, neighbors. This idea that we are part of us. What happens is, in a consumer world, we become collection-oriented. What does that mean? Well, all they want to do is read and take out DVDs. In case you haven't heard it, myth number 31, which is not really a myth, the number one circulated media type at public libraries in the United States is?
E-books.
E-books. No.
Children's.
DVDs. Yeah. DVDs. If you look across the aggregates, not every library is like that. Do you ever know them? Oh, okay. DVDs. Why? Because they're good places to get DVDs. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone's using them the same way. But that means that what are we going to do? Let's buy more DVDs. Oh, Blu-rays. Let's buy more Blu-rays. E-books. Let's buy more e-books. Even if they're going to bankrupt us, we can't find, they're going to violate the privacy of our patrons, but that's what they want. Because we're not willing to engage them in a conversation about what their community needs. We simply want to fulfill it. Collaboration is often seen as a failure. We found this in reference librarians a lot. Reference librarians hate to give up a question. If you ask a reference librarian a question and they don't know the answer, their response will not be, let me find out. Their response will be, yes, yes. Take a look at this resource while I figure out what the hell I'm going to do over here. They could be sitting, excuse me, what exactly is the distance from the Earth to the Sun in miles? Now you can Google that in 10 seconds, but they'll wait until they feel comfortable with an answer. This greedy librarian problem is the idea that we often see collaboration as failure. That we saw that, I was commenting over lunch, that the survey results, that unfortunately some of the survey results were the least surprising metrics I've ever seen in my life. Not that it was a worthwhile study, that's not what I'm saying. The fact that librarians feel that they must form and shape a STEM program makes perfect sense in this world. Because it's going to be perfect, it's going to be amazing, and it's my ass if it doesn't work, pardon my language, right? And so this notion of why not just have the STEM person come in and do it? But what if no one shows up? That would be the first library program that no one showed up to? We can look at collaboration, our skills in it. It also means that we tend to look at skills as things like cataloging. See Dave's previous rant about organizing the internet yet again. We can search for stuff. We can acquire things. The kit, we'll buy it. We'll have STEM. You want STEM? Buy STEM. STEM goes here. Right? Question acquisition. We can help people understand what their questions are, and then we'll find something by putting it in. And what values come in this world? We're neutral. We're a neutral space. People come to us because we are unbiased. And, often said, trusted. And those two phrases are not synonymous. You do not trust someone unless you sort of know what their bias is. We value efficiency. So if we can circulate it, and we can circulate 3 million of them, that's better than having one that works really well. Dewey Decimal, here we are. And equitable access. And the word here is not, these, none of these are bad. That doesn't exist. That gets in the way. And this is a great goal, but is limited. Access. Can we do more than access? What if instead of looking at the greedy librarian problem, we turn that into knitters of the community? Where librarians, as we've heard here, are facilitators of knowledge creation with members and allies. I love allies. I heard that in Pistoia, Italy. They have psychologists, social workers, iron workers, cooks come in, and they do programs, and they call them allies. They're the allies of the libraries. Can you imagine, rather than being the guest speaker for the night, you're an ally, and here's your plaque. Libraries, public libraries, libraries in general, dismiss the amazing value that people invest in our organization. To be associated with us invests people with credibility. I was talking to a state librarian, and I said, have you ever thought about creating a visiting scholar program? And the state librarian's response was, who would ever want to work here? And it's bureaucratic, and it's horrible. I said, stop. That's your life. Don't take that into them. If I got up and said, I am a visiting scholar at the Colorado State Library, that's going to impress more people than people are going to go, oh, what a bureaucratic nightmare. Right? We have allies. And what skills do we need with facilitation? Access, yes. Come in, get to the materials, get to the DVDs, get to this kit, go to the web page. Sure, but two-way access. For far too long, libraries have looked at their job as giving access of their communities to the world and not turned it around and realized that our job is really to create access to the world from our communities. We have things to share. We have items to provide. I was in a college town. I was in Ithaca, New York. And we were talking about what the public library could do. I said, do you have a science collection? And they said, yes, we do. I said, do you have professors come from Cornell and talk about science? And they said, well, why would we do that? And I said, so let me get this straight. You bought the picture book on the space shuttle, but the person who won the Nobel Prize, they're not going to come? This is not a resource you want to provide to the rest of the world. We have the ability to connect people to knowledge, which is uniquely human, and connect and weave people together. You're doing the Fayetteville Free Library, one of my favorite libraries, my backyard library, is going to be doing a poster session on the Geek Girl Camp. I hope I don't give away too much, but what I love about that is they brought in a fighter pilot, they brought in chemists, they brought in physicists, they brought in women scientists from the community. What's great about that is not only, oh, here's a great role model, they were in the community. So on the day after Geek Girl Camp, they connected the community around this issue, right? An environment where people feel safe, feel learned, feel all these things. How do we provide an environment and motivation? And the values of librarianship is not being unbiased or neutral, which is, by the way, the same root as neuter, but being intellectually honest. When someone comes in and asks us about man-made climate change, is it truly neutral to say there are two views on this one? One supported by 98.99% of the scientific community, and one by Bob. Right? That's not neutral. We can't be neutral. As a librarian, if you believe that the best decisions are made in the richest information environments, that is a bias. Mm-hmm.
Because I, trust me, worked in many settings where no, don't confuse them. Give them just the right information. That's an equally valid view in given context, and yet we take the opposite bias. When we look at things like censorship, when we look at things like intellectual access, when we look at things like freezing conditions and copyright, we have a perspective. And we believe in learning and openness, and we believe in intellectual safety. And intellectual safety is not only providing people with safe intellects. Libraries are safe places to access very dangerous ideas. That's very different, and that's a bias. And that's a perspective. So that's my paper, which is, frankly, go read it. It's fine, or not. What I want to talk to you now about is the rant. Yeah, like that wasn't it. Nope. If we seek to use the institution of public library as an instrument of accelerating STEM education, we will be joining a rather crowded field of suitors. From a longstanding mission in literacy to school preparedness to economic development to preservation of cultural heritage to support of local initiatives to simply being the vaunted third space, our public libraries have become a sort of blank canvas for us to project our goals. This is in part because libraries for so long have presented themselves as neutral spaces, and in part because they have been so successful at integrating with the fabric of community life. If we seek to transform our public libraries into STEM platforms, understand that at one point I have been in some conference, and you guys have as well, where we have talked about turning them into one of these as well. And the answer isn't to pick one. The answer is these are important and valuable communities and expertise and knowledge and communities of practice that we need to partner with, that we need to bring in. The idea here that we're going to add more and more and more and expect that our librarians will now become science teachers and plumbers and all the other things we talked about is nuts. And you know, speaking once again about my colleagues, you know why we do it? Because we quest to find something that we think others will find important about us. Oh, if we're STEM, we're important. Oh, if we're entrepreneurship, we're important. I have more news for you. We're important. We're important because we bring skills that all of these areas need. We need facilitation skills. We need access. We need intellectual honesty. We need spaces. But spaces, it's not like we can just have an empty room in a field. Those spaces are curated. Do we have stacks this high that stop conversation or stacks this high that don't? Do we have places that you can be noisy and messy and crazy? Or are they only pristine? We have to understand that as we orchestrate that space, that classroom, we must accommodate these things. And that is a skill that is ours, that we bring to enrich these partnerships. Oh, the physicist won't talk to us. I'm only a librarian. Stop it. You're a librarian. Right? And I'll tell you, I'm in the room. All my STEM friends are sitting here. They're here because they know there is a valuable partner on the other end. We need to live up to that. But we're not done with yet. Which is, it's lovely to talk about the idea that we can be all of these things. But there's another thing that librarians bring to any partnership that we often lead by the side. And that is our values. And that is the notion of empowerment. We believe... How many librarians here feel that you are in the power business? How many of you believe that you're in the empowerment business? How many people realize that the root of empowerment is power? How do you give someone power, impart power to someone else, unless you have it yourself? How do you teach someone to read if you can't read? How do you provide people access to STEM expertise unless you have access to STEM expertise? How do you provide a space for things to happen unless you have space? In order for us to empower the world, we have to ourselves seek power. As public libraries, we do it through the power to collect taxes. We do it through millages. We do it through charters. The government, the people, our communities have given us authority. Have given us power.
And that power comes with responsibility. There is no app to overcome the barriers of race, class, sexual orientation, and gender. And app building won't either. We cannot solve the world's problems of power distributions throughout society by simply believing that code will make a difference. The children of Ferguson were hungry and librarians fed them. When we watched Ferguson, Missouri blow up at the end of summer and they closed schools, and we thought, it's horrible, the kids don't have a school to go to. It was worse than that. A huge percentage of that population was on free or reduced lunches. Those kids didn't go to school. Those kids went hungry. And what happened? The St. Louis County Public Library Branch and the Ferguson Public Library Branch opened their doors and brought in food. And by the way, they didn't call up and say, let's get some pizza. Because the food pantries and the food services were there in the summer already. They had built those interpersonal connections. And I want to be very clear, that was a decision that was made. That's not neutral. I mean, you're telling me that if the governor calls and says we're having, first of all, calls out the armed National Guard, calls out with attack dogs, closes the schools, closes all public service, if the librarian said, you know, I'm thinking maybe not today, the governor would say, no, the public library must go on. Scott Bonner opened those doors. Not only did he open those doors, he spent every night walking the library with a fire extinguisher in his hands. He made a choice. That's the power and values that we bring to these relationships. The parents of Baltimore were without diapers, and the librarians provided them. When Baltimore had an amazing peaceful protest, and it boiled over, and it turned to rioting, where they destroyed commerce, convenience stores, a mall in a part of Baltimore. People don't realize that what they also destroyed was they destroyed any public restroom facilities, any places to buy food. They destroyed any places to get diaper and care. Because the major issue with inner city populations is not that they can't find a library or they don't want to go to a library. It's because they don't have public transportation to go to a library. And so what did the Baltimore librarians do? They didn't just open the door. They took in every spare dollar they could and they bought diapers. And they provided them. And they provided values. Public libraries were created out of a quest for societal equity. Any STEM initiative must further this cause, or libraries simply become an agency of elite solutions, not agents of change. Do we teach black girls coding to improve their control of society or to make the powerful feel better? Do we promise a career in science to a bullied transgender student as a means of engagement or as an illusion of inclusion? If we truly believe that public libraries can improve society through STEM, we need librarians that are radical, positive change agents and STEM allies that embrace these values. When that person who believes that this app can change the world comes to us, we don't laugh. We don't say, oh, go away. Invite them in. Invite them in and hear what they have to say and say, that's great. Now, let's think about how that app's going to help someone who can't get on a bus system. That's great. Now, how are we going to handle the English as a second language population where all the textbooks you've just brought me and all the workbooks you've just brought me are in English? As public libraries, we were formed around social equity. What we talk about with STEM is the idea of empowerment. What we talk about with STEM is the idea of giving people more say and control in society. That is not a neutral mission. That is a radical mission, and that is a mission of power. If I ask you, why are you doing this STEM program? Is it to support society, to structure society, or to subvert society? I'll give you a hint. If you say all of them, you've already chosen one, and it's not the one you think. When we look at those READ posters, because reading and literacy is going to serve and support, bring the world about. Do we want people reading to control and be democratic participants? Do we want them to read to understand how government works, how they work, how science works, how we can improve society? Or do we want them to read to be entertained? when we talk about, and I have to say I've learned so much in this one day, about talking about outside of formal education, the time we have access. And I believe that there is a passion of power, and a passion to change society that exists in the STEM community right next to the library community. I think we're kindred spirits. But I think we also need to understand that we're all in the power side. And as I look around this, I hate to be the one who brings this up, but we're on one part of that power equation. How can we be inclusive? How can we bring in these ideas? As we talk about STEM, it's not a matter of, do we have a kit? It's not a matter of, do we have, you know, enough, oh, we don't want to do STEM because I might get the answer wrong, or, oh, we don't have time for it. Why do we want to do STEM? I think we want to do STEM because we want to live in a better world. I think it's a very selfish reason. I think that librarians love working in great communities, and great communities love great libraries. And I think STEM folks get it because they understand the world and they see a magic in your ability to understand and comprehend the enormous and the very small. When I talk to physicists, when I talk to chemists, when I talk to these people, and they bring out their passion and they talk about the idea that they can truly understand with the power of mathematics how universes move about. And they say, isn't that amazing? And the first thing they want to do is show someone else. And when I see a librarian, and when I ask a librarian, every librarian has the story. It's the story that you hold in your heart. It's the story that when the 28th person comes to the desk asking, by the way, it's no longer, where's the bathroom? Now it's, did you find a flash drive? Right? It's that story that when you're in the committee meeting for the 38th hour where you've already talked about this and you're trying again, it's that story of when you change someone's life. Every librarian who has a passion talks about the fact that they introduced a child to reading, that they helped a parent bring a child along, that they helped a child find college, that they helped a student learn and participate, become a professor, whatever it is. It never begins, and I organize the most beautiful book collection. And I'm telling you, I know many STEM scientists, it never starts with, and I published a paper with the greatest margin. These are tools. It's the passion that will bring us together. But it must also, when we come together, must be an interpersonal connection, and it must be driven by common values. I want to be very clear about this. Adopting STEM to help someone find a job is not a value. It's an outcome. Doing STEM because it's interesting and sexy and fundable is not a value. It's a strategy. Using STEM and diapers and food and books and databases and people and friends and allies to change a life so that they feel a little bit more comfortable in helping society move their way. That's what this relationship has to be about. That's the foundation which we can move forward in STEM. Yes, let's do the communities of practice. Yes, let's do the research agenda. That's all important. But never forget, behind it must be a crowd of individuals with passion screaming out to the world, we can do better, we can do better, we can do better. And that's everyone in this room, and that's where it starts. Thank you very much.
Oh, yes, sorry.